and Paul Rasmussen. Paul last night spent an interesting evening with Chris Wallace, who his entire news career covers so much ground, working for Fox News, CNN News, working for ABC, as a writer and journalist, and the son of the late Mike Wallace, who obviously came to fame as one of the investigative reporters on 60 Minutes. And it was interesting, the conversation and the questions from the audience. A lot of them were about the media and what the role of the media is and where it stands today. It was fascinating.
Kind of a shame that things have gotten to the point now, and in recent polling, repeatedly, the public's evaluation of the national media and their level of trust is an all-time low. It's down in the 20% range.
And so, and on that note, he was asked about this Signal. So for people that don't know, this Signal is an app, right?
It's like WhatsApp or Messenger or the text messaging app on like an iPhone, for example.
Right. But apparently there's supposed to be a way to create a private conversation, even though it's a public app, but it is exposed to obviously being hacked. And that was a lot of the conversation about what Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, and others were talking about in terms of bombing that turned out.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't seen or heard much on this story, basically what Hegseth is talking about is messages were shared with administration officials about attacks that were about to or taking place, U.S. airstrikes in Yemen.
From The Atlantic.
And the Atlantic reporter, who happens to be a well-known Trump hater, let's be honest about it, chose to make that public instead of going to the administration and saying, hey, I'm included in this. What happened here? He's made a story of it. And now, as you would imagine, with the blood sport that they play in Washington, D.C., we've got a big story now. And, I mean, the things that they're saying about each other on the opposite sides of it, it's entertaining now. Grab the popcorn.
Well, to that end, CBS's Jaron Hill. We'll start with, what did Donald Trump say about it yesterday?
I think it's all a witch hunt.
President Donald Trump continued to downplay the growing concerns stemming from The Atlantic's editor Jeffrey Goldberg being mistakenly added to a group chat on Signal where top Trump officials discussed sensitive military operations.
Nobody's texting war plans. There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth Wednesday, after Goldberg published more messages from the chat, including some where Hegseth detailed the specific times F-18 fighter jets would launch to strike a target terrorist. Less than 3 hours later, Hegseth wrote, sea-based Tomahawks would be launched.
They're saying nothing happened. I'm saying that this represents a serious breach in national security.
CBS News has learned the top Democrat and Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee are pushing for a classified briefing and an expedited report from the Inspector General on the incident. Meanwhile, President Trump is turning up the heat on trade. Yesterday, he announced a new 25% tariff on all imported automobiles starting April 2nd.
This is the beginning of Liberation Day in America.
The White House claims the new tariffs will lead to $100 billion in revenue and push companies to make more cars in the U.S. But economists say they could add thousands of dollars to the price of a new car.
President Trump's reciprocal tariffs are also set to hit on April 2nd, but he's watering those down, saying they'll probably be more lenient than reciprocal because the original tariffs would be very tough for people.
CBS is Jaron Hill. So there's plenty of news coming out of Washington every day.
Yeah. Circling back, by the way, to what they're now calling Signalgate. Here's a quote from the president's press secretary. She said, I guess yesterday, we are not going to be lectured about national security and American troops by Democrats in the mainstream media who turned the other cheek when the Biden administration left 13 service members to die in Afghanistan.
That was their...
So the gloves are off.
And I would imagine that will continue. But more practically, from a daily standpoint, the tariffs on the automobiles are probably more tangible for the average person who wants to buy a car.
And I think it's interesting, too, that in recent days, they didn't get a lot of news coverage, but some. Rolls-Royce announced that it was going to move some of its production to the United States to avoid these tariffs. And also, Hyundai announced last week a $20 billion investment and increased production in the U.S., with almost $6 billion being spent for a new steel facility in Louisiana. And I thought, Larry, that that was ironic in that the administration's, you know, really pumping that one, but their, you know, position on the Nippon Steel takeover of U.S. Steel for even more money than that, like almost $15 billion, has been kind of lukewarm. Isn't that interesting?
It is.
We're all concerned about what's going to happen with that. It's been kind of quiet on that lately, hasn't it?
Yeah, there are so many, and again, having a conversation with Chris Wallace, who spent his career as a journalist, he said there's so much news breaking every day that it's almost like a juggling act to figure out which is the most important to impact the most people in any given moment.
And it's got to be hard to do that job if you want to be good at it, if you're in Washington or New York. I think it would be difficult because they're so insular and isolated from the rest of the country. What matters to people like you and me and our listeners here in Pittsburgh may not be even on their radar in either D.C. or New York.
And I think they're obviously looking at ways to battle each other, you know, in Washington. It's,
well, I mean, this is the, you know, what they, this kind of thing's been going on for as long as I can remember. There's some kind of a mistake is made. There's some kind of vulnerability. And then the one side attacks the other. And you know how this goes. I mean, and it doesn't make any difference if there's a Republican in the White House or a Democrat. If this had happened under, you know, Barack Obama's watch, somebody would have made a big deal out of it and turned it into a, you know, these people don't know what the hell they're doing, right?
Right. And it was fascinating to hear Chris Wallace talk about how to navigate that these days. He's covered presidents all the way back to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
So Republican and Democratic presidents. Do you want to hear who the speakers are for the speaker series?
Absolutely.
For next year?
Yeah.
They released it last night.
So this was the last speech this year?
No, there's one more. Okay. Next month is Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh, my. What a great session that will be.
Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, who, for those that don't know, has produced some of the greatest musicals of all time. Phantom of the Opera being one,
easily.
Cats being another, and unbelievable creativity.
Some of the longest-running Broadway productions ever.
He's also the producer. So he has all aspects. I mean, the mind of someone that can put those kind of shows together.
So let's have the lineup.
All right. I'm going to make you wait just a minute. But it's interesting. If you have a minute.
Oh, I'll make a minute.
Pittsburgh Speaker Series presented by the University of Pittsburgh, the Spanos Group of Raymond James, and News Radio KDKA. Last night, University of Pittsburgh Speaker Series at Hines Hall. Talk to journalist Chris Wallace, and next month I mentioned Andrew Lloyd Webber will wrap up this season. But each and every year, Paul, there's a lot of anticipation because they build up, speaking about teasing, the next season. So the second to the last speaker, and there are seven each year, they reveal the lineup. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The first speaker, born and raised in Brooklyn, majored in the classics in college. His career spanning 50 years, world-renowned accomplishments, has touched billions of lives, a leader from the start. He was the captain of his high school basketball team, advised seven presidents, both Republican and Democrat, earning the highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Now, who is this?
The number one ranked subscriber survey opening the season, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Oh, boy.
The lightning rod through the COVID.
Oh, so, man. They are not going to shirk any possible.
No.
I mean, this is as controversial a speaker as you can find.
Right out of the gate.
I mean, the man is either respected or reviled.
And you should have heard the audience reaction.
What was it?
It was like, oh, my God. You know, because I don't think anyone expected Dr. Fauci. but he is the first speaker. Next up.
Yeah, when you go down that list of credentials and accomplishments and then you hear his name, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about provocative.
Next is decorated combat veteran with a PhD in military history. He commanded forces in wartime Afghanistan and Iraq, helped shape U.S. military and foreign policy, hailed as the Army's preeminent warrior thinker. He was tapped to serve as National Security Advisor by President Trump. In November, it'll be retired three-star Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster.
Mm-hmm.
A big name in that world. Next up, educated in Britain at Cambridge, worked closely with Senator John McCain to pass the Magnitsky Act to sanction foreign officials who commit human rights violations. Longtime contributor to the Washington Post. Check this out. He survived two attempts on his life, poisoning attempts by his own government, and was sentenced to 25 years in a Siberian prison for opposing the war in Ukraine.
I think I know who this is.
His essay, smuggled out of solitary confinement, won a 2024 Pulitzer Prize, freed in a East-West prisoner exchange this past August. Russian journalist and opposition leader Vladimir Karamurza.
Mm-hmm.
It will be fascinating to hear somebody like that who's been through so much.
You know, what this all reminds me of, by the way, I don't know if you feel the same way, but remember the dust-up back in the, I guess it was in the late 70s, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the author?
Yes.
Again, it's this dissident voice that comes out of Russia that winds up in the world spotlight.
And his miracle of getting this word out and then thinking his life may have been over twice.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing. Currently partnering with Tom Hanks to take their most recent book to the big screen. Best-selling Pulitzer Prize-winning presidential historian has written about America's most legendary leaders. An expert on leadership and democracy, her work was the inspiration for Steven Spielberg's film Lincoln. Number one on the annual survey for authors and historians, President Lyndon Johnson's favorite White House intern.
Oh, boy.
Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Okay, all right.
One of the sharpest minds in global economics and geopolitics. This next speaker, an advisor to the White House, a doctorate from the London School of Economics, credited with coining the term shrinkflation, tech entrepreneur with the rare talent of making sense of emerging technologies and shifts in world financial markets, a trusted voice in business, policymakers, innovators around the world. Next February, the brilliant mind of economist Pippa Mulgren.
Hmm.
Now, not a household name like an Anthony Fauci, but when you hear her resume.
Easily interesting enough, though, right?
Yes. And just two more. A Canadian. How about this? Phenomenally successful author. His debut book spent over 400 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, and then he broke his own record 8 years later. His writing changed the way many look at the world, one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people, an award-winning podcaster, outlier. You've read him for years, maybe, in The New Yorker. The sixth speaker is the author of The Tipping Point, Malcolm Gladwell. And finally, closing out next April, a visual journey of the Earth's wildest places, from the Arctic to the warm waters of Mexico. One of the most influential conservation photographers of all time. She's a marine biologist and was named Smithsonian's Photographer of the Year. Very excited to meet and introduce National Geographic explorer Christina Mittermaier. So.
What an interesting lineup. There's some names that are well known by those who, you know, keep track of what's going on. And then you've got this, I mean, talk about starting with a bang.
Big time.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll be a moment. But the speaker series, and you can go to pittsburghspeakers.org, the team that vets these speakers, they want a group. They want, and this is a diverse group that, you know, they're presenting for next year. So fascinating, interesting. And for those that don't know, you sit down, I introduce the speaker. The speaker comes out, usually does 45 minutes to an hour of a lecture, and then there's a half hour of Q&A from audience questions. And that formula has worked very well. And it was sold out last night. There wasn't an empty seat.
Larry, how many years have you been doing the speaker series? It seems like it's been quite a long time.
12.
Wow.
Yeah, Jim Cunningham from WQED did the first 10 years, and I've done the last 12. We're the media sponsor, and Jim did a great job. Just a tremendous journalist and a kind man and a Pittsburgh guy. And it's an honor to do this.
You know, over the years, you talked about some of the guests that you interacted with. And the two that I keep going away with, Alan Alda's one of them.
Remember that?
That was a pretty memorable time.
Oh, Jane Fonda, and Dan Rather.
Exactly.
Prime ministers, presidents, including Bill Clinton.
The one that you tell about Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, though, it's a fun story.
Oh, that was great. And then meeting, and originally before I became the moderator, was Walter Cronkite. And I did a one-on-one television interview with him. And I remember sitting down with him and I'm looking at him thinking, you know, he was such a big presence on television back when people watched network news.
Yeah,
millions of people.
And the way he closed his newscast with, and that's the way it is. I mean, what a great conclusion to a newscast.
And my first question to him was, I said, Mr. Cronkite, please call me Walter. And I said, well, did you ever cover a major story around the Pittsburgh area? Well, Larry, and that's all I heard. Walter Cronkite said my name. And he said, I covered the nuclear reactor and shipping port when it online in 1954.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
What an amazing life he led.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Thanks for choosing us. Have you gone through the process of having your genetic sequencing with 23andMe to find out who you are? Well, if you don't know, and it was widely publicized, they have filed for Chapter 11, and now a lot of customers are wondering, where will my DNA data go?
Yes.
And joining us is Colin Waukee, who is a cybersecurity and data privacy expert and also a former Oklahoma House of Representatives, where he authored a data privacy legislation for just this kind of thing, to adequate, you know, consumer data privacy protections. So, Colin, welcome to KDK.
Morning, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Have you ever had your genes sequenced?
No, because as my wife accuses me, I wear a tinfoil hat and I keep my data to myself.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Oh, my.
But this does, because of the bankruptcy, open up a important conversation about someone's DNA data and privacy. What do you suppose is going to happen here?
Well, there are a lot of different aspects to this. First of all, for most of your listeners, there are two big concerns. The first big concern is, what is somebody going to do with the data once they purchase it, right? The other big concern, though, is this information, while it exists out there, it opens up individuals to exploitation, both through deep fakes as well as discrimination. So, for example, 23andMe just settled a data breach lawsuit from a few years ago in which 5 million records were hacked. It's my understanding 23andMe has about 25 million records on file. Those 6 million or so files that were hacked were all or targeted towards Chinese or Ashkenazi individuals. So your genetic information, unlike your Social Security information and those sorts of things, can't be changed. And if somebody gets a hold of genetic information from you that says you have a particular disease or a particular ethnic trait, and someone wants to discriminate against you, they have the ability to do that now because there aren't really any books on the laws that prohibit that type of discrimination.
Colin, how would a prospective employer, for example, get a hold of this DNA information and make use of it in terms of like hiring?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, for example, 23andMe, right now, unless there is a state law that applies to them, for example, like maybe Colorado, there are very few state laws that would necessarily apply to 23andMe in this situation. So that means you have to look at 23andMe's terms of service and conditions, which are constantly changing. So because they're not governed by HIPAA or any federal law, that means that in theory, if somebody buys this information, just like every other thing that you buy, sell, or do on the internet and how that data is traded with data brokers, they could share this information with data brokers. There's nothing that would prohibit them from doing that. And then data brokers package all this information. They say Colin Waukee likes to eat at McDonald's, shop at Dillard's, and by the way, here's his genetic info. And if I'm an employer, all I've got to do is go to data brokers and I can find that information for, you know, nominal costs.
Well, that said, no doubt we have many listeners in this area who have gone through this process. What are you advising people to do?
So I tell everybody, call and get your information deleted as soon as possible. You may have to submit a form through their website, but get your information deleted as soon as possible. That is going to be the most important thing that you can do to protect your financial and personal security. After that, you know, there is a chance that some of your data remains behind in 23andMe because oftentimes what they do is they take your data, they copy it, and they do what's called de-identification, which means Colin Waukee's personal identifiers are removed from that, which is all well and good, except other data sets exist in the world. And if I can relink basically one data point back to 23andMe, I can re-identify whose information that is. So it may not cure the problem, but it certainly goes a very long way to solving the problem.
Colin, three words just came up for me as I was listening to this in terms of the legal ramifications. Class action lawsuit.
Yeah, well, if you read 23andMe's terms of service, they have a big disclaimer against any form of class action lawsuit. And I'm glad you brought that up, though, Larry, because what I should have said when you said what can consumers do, I should have said call your state and federal representatives and tell them to get serious about data privacy legislation. It is quite pathetic that we've been dealing with this for 25 years now. We know individuals have been exploited financially and personally by the buying and selling of their data, and yet our representatives are doing nothing about it. That's what needs to happen.
It sounds like, Colin, our representatives don't have enough knowledge of the subject, and they're obviously hesitant to do anything because this, as you know, privacy issue comes up in a lot of social media platforms too.
That's right. It really comes down to dollars and cents, though. I agree that most legislators probably aren't well informed enough to write good legislation about this, but there are organizations out there that do have good legislation. The problem is dollars and cents. So, for example, in Oklahoma, I ran this country's strongest data privacy bill. It was what's called opt-in, which means that you have to say you get to collect my data and sell it before you collect it and sell it. Every other state law is opt-out. And so the real problem, though, is that Facebook, once Apple, their app store, went to opt-in, Facebook said that it cost them $10 billion of revenue in one quarter. So that's why the lobbyists don't like this. That's why the tech companies don't like data privacy legislation, is because of the money they're losing when they can't collect and sell your data unilaterally.
Fascinating and informative. Colin, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Colin Waukee, who is a cybersecurity and data privacy expert. Sounds like he really knows what he's talking about, too.
He was very much so.
But what he said just resonated. $10 billion in a quarter they lost just by making the opt-in as opposed to opt-out.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the top 10 richest people on Earth. Most of them have positions and made their money in social media.
Yes. Yeah,
you're not going to change that narrative.
It's an entirely new facet of our economy. And yep. And we haven't even touched yet cryptocurrency.
That said, have you ever done this 23andMe?
No. I remember though years back that 23andMe was like a sponsor of the CBS radio newscast, remember?
Yep.
You know, this is the CBS News sponsored by 23andMe.
Don't you get the feeling, though, that some people got these readings on who, you know, their breakdown of their genetic history and some of these other, I guess you could get your DNA checked to see where you came from.
Well, sure. Yeah. You know, but the way I look at it is I'm just not curious for this reason. I know I'm defective.
You don't want to know any more about you.
I know enough already.
Oh, that's gold.
From the Goldberg Persky & White News Desk, it's opening day, and Paul Skeens is starting for the Bucks at Miami. Let's take a flashback now.
1-2, a swing and a miss. He struck him out. Skeens strikes out Aaron Judge on the slider, and he strikes out Soto and Judge in the first. Paul Skeens, get ready for a Rookie of the Year in Pittsburgh.
And he certainly earned that distinction. So in his second season, Paul, he's added a pitcher, too, to his repertoire.
And now the question is, Larry, can he be a Cy Young Award winner? Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth addressed again the leaked group chat about U.S. airstrikes in Yemen that accidentally included a journalist telling reporters in Hawaii,
"There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information."
Simple question is, why were they using this app in the first place? So I imagine that's not going to happen again.
Yeah, I would imagine that. Yeah, we should hear something on that angle from the White House, right? And Visit Pittsburgh's annual meeting was held Wednesday, hosted by an upbeat CEO, Jared Bacher.
When we look at 2026 and beyond, we'll have a new airport, a new international airport that'll be world-class. The downtown area will continue
show,
to see
Larry
development.
Richard with
there'll be a lot more opportunities
Anchorman,
for us
Paul
to point
Rasmussen,
to the success of the NFL
day
draft.
Of baseball and the NFL
and
draft
in our 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to former Pirates pitcher, part of the broadcast team now,
to the economy,
Matt Capps,
that weekend.
Oh, yeah. And
Larry,
sure,
he
released some images, some renderings of what the draft
like share.
Will look like
I
in terms of some
you,
of the venues.
Okay.
I was impressed.
10 years
you could probably see those.
Actually,
they probably have all of them available right now. Visit Pittsburgh.com.
In the opener. That's it. NeilWalker.com
hit a walk-off
who winner.
Were born here, natives like me,
beat the Cubs 1-0.
You have this resource
at the time,
right, at your fingertips.
My father was going through chemotherapy, and I was in the room with him at the hospital while they were doing this. And there were a number of people in there doing the same thing. And the nursing staff was out just outside the door, you know, around this circular station, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they had the Pirates game on the screens, but no audio. So, Neil Walker, I've known Neil's family for years. His father, the late Tom Walker, who was also a major leaguer, and his wife, Carolyn, great people. And so knew Neil since he was a kid. So my dad was, you know, sitting there with that pick in his arm, getting the chemo, right? And I just started doing the play-by-play by watching the screen, and everybody in there was kind of getting a kick out of it, right? And turns out Neil hits a home run walk-off.
That's so
in
cool.
Home opener. And you could hear the nurses cheering out in the hallway there. You know, it's just something that crossed my mind this morning. I'm like, wow. And I haven't thought about that since. And I thought, you know, that's kind of what baseball does. Take your mind off, you know, the gravity of what we were doing in the moment. And everybody was kind of cheering for Neil and the Pirates just for the opening day. It was kind of a moment.
People at Sportsnet put out a little blurb yesterday that came into our inbox in the newsroom about their broadcast lineup. It sounds pretty much unchanged. Greg Brown and Joe Block doing the play-by-play. The color analysts will be Bob Walk, John Wehner, as you said, Matt Capps, Kevin Young, Neil Walker, right?
Yeah,
and I think Neil in that lineup, by the way, I think Neil's the best of the bunch. I enjoy listening to him a lot. Hannah Mears is the sideline reporter, so that's for the game itself. Then the studio team, Rob King will be hosting the majority of them. And then the former Pirates, you got McHenry, Fort McHenry, Stephen Brault, Jordy Mercer, Alex Presley, Kevin Young, and Matt Capps again.
Boy, that's a expansive.
They have a lot of people
team.
Working. And then they've got more sideline and hosting done by Dan Potash and Haley Hunter. And Dan Potash, by the way, boy, do I like watching him do hockey games. Those interviews between the periods with the Penguins, they're terrific.
I'm glad you brought that up, because if you want to see the expansive video coverage, they're offering a deal, Sportsnet Pittsburgh, the streaming deal.
So in other words, instead of buying it on a month-by-month basis, now people can buy a six-month block, right?
Yes. So if you're a baseball-only fan, for instance, you can just buy the season, basically, and vice versa. For the Penguin and Penguin games.
They're calling it the season pass option, Larry, and the price on it got my attention yesterday. It's $99.99 for 6 months?
That's actually...
I mean, that sounds pretty reasonable. I mean, think about how much it costs to go to a game.
Right. When you do the math, say you were going, just say a family of four, you know, by the time you... And baseball tickets are much more reasonable because there's so many more games, right? And then you would... pay for parking and whatever treats you're going to get at the ballpark, it adds up. So if you're really a big fan and want to not miss a minute, that seems like a reasonable price option.
So what's your gut tell you about what's ahead this year? I think it's good starting out with Miami, because the Marlins were not a very good team last year.
The gut is, and you hear everybody talk about it, they want ownership.
I mean, you were down there, Larry. You should know.
They want ownership to spend more money on players. Okay, let's get that out on the table. Second, we have one of the best pitchers in baseball, and exciting with Paul Skeens, who opens today, as you mentioned. What we don't know is, will this team be able to hit with some of the new acquisitions, some of the players? And if they can, they will win more games than they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly disappointing, because they had back-to-back years where they won 76 games and lost 86.
Mm.
If somehow they can find a way to flip that, it would be postseason, and this town will go out of its mind again, like they did back in, you know, those...
Like 2013 was one heck of a year.
Three seasons in a row.
It just changed the culture of the city when they were playing well like that.
And it was fun. But it's nice that get the season underway. And again, Matt Capps will join us in our 9 o'clock hour and talk about his memories of opening day. I can tell you this, for the players, doesn't matter how big a star they are, opening days are always magic, and they love it. They love it in the home opener especially, which will be a week from tomorrow against the New York Yankees.
Mm.
Hey, there's a story out of Florida I wanted to share with you, because this will open up a lot of questions with people being deported who were doing what others would consider menial jobs. They're having a hard time filling many of those jobs, and now they're changing the laws in Florida to allow younger and younger teens to take some of those jobs. Check out this from CBS's Manuel Bohorquez.
Florida's crackdown on hiring undocumented workers started 2 years ago, a law signed into effect by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, who last week acknowledged a tightening workforce.
Why do we say we need to import foreigners, even import them illegally, when, you know, teenagers used to work at these resorts?
A Florida Senate bill would remove restrictions on 16 and 17-year-olds, allowing for overnight shifts, shifts longer than 8 hours during school days, more than 30 hours during school weeks, and remove mandated meal breaks. It would also lift those restrictions on 14 and 15-year-olds who are homeschooled or attend virtual classes.
This is a parental rights issue, and frankly, we're not talking The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. We're talking about them working at Publix, at Piggly Wiggly.
This comes as Florida has about 77 available workers for every 100 open jobs, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But at Paradise Farms in Homestead, farm manager Brendan Sutton does not believe easing restrictions on child labor is the answer.
That's what this bill is designed for, to take advantage of poor people for the benefit of rich people.
Do you see a world where a parent who's undocumented doesn't feel that they can freely go out to work may want to send their child to do it instead?
Yeah, I mean, that's you're getting to the crux of the matter. Like, we've been promised this mass deportation, and now the business class is wondering, oh, what are we going to do to replace our cheap labor?
Florida Policy Institute's Alexis Tsoukalos is against the bill.
That's really going to be an unfair choice between school and work when really we should be keeping these guardrails in place so there's a proper balance.
She says 16 other states are also considering rolling back some protections or have already done so as the debate in Florida continues. Manuel Bojorquez, CBS News, Homestead, Florida.
How young were you, Paul, when you had your first job where they took taxes out?
15.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I worked part-time, and I couldn't wait to get into the workplace and try things out. Started off in a hobby store, then in a restaurant, a couple of different restaurants, and then I wound up working part-time in radio in my junior and senior years. And I would have done that for free if they asked me to.
When I was 15,
I was so interested.
I was the baked potato fry and bun man at Ponderosa.
I worked at Mr. Steak. I was what they call the wheel man. And boy, was that hard work.
Baker's down. All right, I'm getting them.
Yep.
This is the Big K Morning Show. And every Tuesday at this time, we check in with another medical professional from Independence Health System Expert Care here. We had our Giant Eagle Feed the Need all day Tuesday. So our guest was kind enough to join us this morning. And Dr. Thomas Branko is the Medical Director of Interventional Radiology. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
Let's just start by defining what interventional radiology is.
Yes, so interventional radiology is a specialty where doctors use imaging guidance, which can be fluoroscopy, which is a type of X-ray, similar to heart catheterizations, but also other imaging like CT, ultrasound, and sometimes even MRI that perform minimally invasive procedures that often will help people avoid more involved procedures, major surgery type procedures. So that's pretty much what an interventional radiologist does.
All right. Let's also ask to explain what a pulmonary embolism is and how common are they?
So pulmonary embolism is really just a blood clot in the lungs, and they usually come from what's called a deep vein thrombus or a blood clot in the veins of the legs that break off from the legs and travel to the lungs. They cause their problems because they'll cause difficulties with impairing gas exchange in the lungs and causing the right side of the heart to work more. They're more common than people think, actually. It's estimated there's about one case per 1,000 people per year, or in the United States, between 300,000 and 600,000 cases a year, and they can contribute to about 100,000 deaths per year in the United States. And in fact, Larry, over the last 30 years, hospital admissions for these have increased over 237%. For pulmonary embolism, and part of that is due to better technology with CT scans picking them up. But it is definitely something that we're seeing on the rise over the last three decades.
And doctor, what are the typical symptoms that someone might experience if they're having a pulmonary embolism?
The symptoms can range from no symptoms at all, where it's picked up as an incidental finding on a CT scan, say, performed for something else, to having shortness of breath at rest or with minimal exertion. Some people will describe chest pain. Sometimes that's called pleuritic chest pain, where you feel it when you take a breath in. Fatigue, coughing up blood, something referred to as hemoptysis in the medical world, or even passing out or near passing out. And then, of course, with a massive pulmonary embolism, it can even present as sudden cardiac arrest, ultimately leading to death.
I've always heard, doctor, that if you cough up blood, then that is a sign of and a reason to see your physician, even in your PE, right?
That is correct, yes.
All right. What are the treatment options then when you have discovered a pulmonary embolism?
So treatment options will depend on the patient's clinical status as well as the overall clot burden in the lungs. It can be as straightforward as medical therapy, being put on blood thinners as an outpatient and following with your doctor. If the patient has a more serious clinical condition in terms of symptoms being more serious, large clot burden, they can be admitted to the hospital, started on intravenous blood thinners. And then over the last several years, there have been advances in more invasive procedures that interventional radiologists do. One is catheter-directed thrombolysis, which involves putting a catheter up from a vein at the hip and advancing it up into the right side of the heart, into the arteries that go to the lungs where the clots are, and infusing a very potent medicine to break up the clot. Some patients can also benefit from something called catheter-directed thrombectomy, where you put a larger bore catheter up the same way and actually aspirate the clot out through that catheter.
And what's the shockwave treatment that's part of this for different diseases?
So shockwave lithotripsy, going down a different pathway here, is for peripheral arterial disease. So peripheral arterial disease is basically the restriction of adequate blood flow to the extremities, what we call hardening of the arteries or atherosclerosis. And shockwave lithotripsy is a newer technology that's come out the last couple of years. What it involves is the technology of lithotripsy that's been used for years for kidney stones, but it's applied to the blood vessels. And so an angioplasty balloon, which is inflated to open up a blocked blood vessel, contains a type of technology where there's a vaporization of the fluid in that balloon. What that does is it creates a sonic pressure wave, causing microfractures in the calcium plaque in the blood vessel wall. The overall idea is to improve the flow through that vessel.
A lot of great information, Doctor. We appreciate what you and your team do every day. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Thomas Branco, Medical Director of Interventional Radiology in the Butler area of the Independence Health System Expert Care here. Oh, and I look forward to this moment every week with Dr. Mike Hutchinson of Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. Doc, good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good. I was thinking about you because of this wild weather swing we've had in the month of March, where we had tornadoes, we've had freezing weather, we've had warm weather, looking at 76 for a high Saturday. But we did talk about the fact that it was the coldest winter in a decade, and that will help with the tick population, but still one of our top questions.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. Every day above 32 degrees, those ticks are coming out. Even if there's snow on the ground, they're coming out looking for a blood meal. We find ticks every month of the year on our pets. We find them in the clinic, and that's why it's so important to do year-round tick control.
Well, that leads right into the first question from Emma in Shadyside. Doc, do I really need to treat my indoor cat for fleas and ticks?
You know, that's a very good question, and I like that question because I get that a lot. And so absolutely you should. Remember that these fleas and ticks can hitchhike on us into the house. Now, most of the products that we use are for fleas and ticks. You don't get one just for fleas and one just for ticks. So when I say treat them year-round, I'm considering fleas and ticks that year-round treatment. So by taking care of the ticks that are a year-round problem, you're also ready for the flea season, which isn't as bad in the winter, but it is something that we do recommend treating indoor cats. I treat my indoor cats because I have dogs that go in and out, and we go in and out. So that's how they get. They sense carbon dioxide, hop onto us, we walk in, we're not their host, they jump off, now they're on the cat.
So they literally sense the stuff that we're basically giving off, so to speak.
Yeah, and when we exhale, they can sense that carbon dioxide. And it happens every year. People come in and they have a flea problem with their indoor cats, and they go, Dr. Mike, I don't understand. This cat never goes outside. So that's how they get in. They hitchhike on us, and then it becomes a problem. 10 fleas in a month can lay 200,000 eggs. So you get one or two fleas in, and now you have a problem. You know, within a month or 2 months, you have a serious problem.
Excuse me, I'm scratching. Well, speaking of ticks, now we go from a cat to a dog in Cranberry Township. Carolyn wants to know, Dr. Mike, after finding ticks on our dog, should we treat him preemptively for Lyme disease or wait for symptoms? This is a great question.
Yeah, they're a really good question because they do that a lot in people if you find it, because they get that little bullseye, and then a lot of the doctors will give you antibiotics for a few days to prevent the infection. But we don't treat the dogs preemptively. We only treat them if symptoms appear. And the reason that we do that is because 90% of the dogs that get exposed to Lyme disease never get sick. So we don't want to, you know, treat them for something that's not happening. Monitor them for symptoms, fever, limping, lethargy, decreased appetite, those kinds of things. Keep them on tick prevention year-round. And we can do a quick blood test, a 10-minute blood test to check for exposure in animals if you did see engorged ticks. We say that from that tick, it might take 4 to 6 weeks for the Lyme disease to develop. But what if they got bit 4 to 6 weeks earlier? So you can always do a quick tick test to see if your dog has Lyme disease.
From Laura in Gibsonia, dear Dr. Mike, what do you think about glucosamine supplements for older dogs with stiff joints? We've heard about this for people.
Yeah, I love it. Glucosamine conjoint and sulfate. The products in dogs that I like are Dasaquin, U-Move, Y-U-Move, M-O-V-E. I like them a lot. You can have them with MSM. Sometimes they're added with MSM. We don't know if that does a lot of good, but in some dogs it seems to. And always remember omega-3 fatty acids from fish oil. I always talk about those. Will help with the arthritis too. So certainly I love the glucosamine supplements. Even in younger dogs, if they have athletic injuries, sometimes you get a 3-year-old dog that tears its cruciate in its knee joint. And those are good dogs to put on prevention for the future, because glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate will help lubricate the joints. So it helps keep them from developing more arthritis, hopefully.
I would imagine it's difficult sometimes with certain animals, especially dogs and cats, obviously, to find ticks sometimes.
Oh, ticks are a nightmare to find. I have a long-haired shepherd. Good luck finding those, unless they're on the surface crawling. And they blend in. He's black and tan. They blend in. They're very, so I always go over them when they come in. I spray the Listerine and water over them. For the people who don't know, the regular strength or the original Listerine, not the minty fresh. Fill up a spray bottle 90% of the way with the Listerine. Fill it up the rest of the way with water. Shake it up. Spray it over your dog's coat before you go for a walk. Spray it on your clothing, and it helps repel them. It doesn't kill them, but it helps repel them. And then you hope the tick prevention that you're using does the rest of the job if they get through that.
And then you may have ticks with fresh breath, but don't be fooled.
Exactly.
Doc, always illuminating. I appreciate it.
A lot of fun. Have a great weekend.
All right. The good Dr. Mike Hutchinson. Go to animalgeneral.net. We have a link at kdkaradio.com.
From the Goldberg, Persky, and White News Desk, it is opening day, and Paul Skeens is starting for the Bucks at Miami. And the question is, can he top last year?
1-2, a swing and a miss. He struck him out. Skeens strikes out Aaron Judge on the slider, and he strikes out Soto and Judge in the first. Paul Skeens, get ready for a Rookie of the Year in Pittsburgh.
The voice of Joe Block, who will join us every Friday, by the way, at 9:35. And yes, Skeens has apparently developed some additional weapons and extra pitches. So we'll see how that goes starting today.
Mm-hmm. I know what I'm doing at 4 o'clock. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth addressed again that leaked group chat about U.S. airstrikes in Yemen that accidentally included a journalist. And here's what he told reporters in Hawaii.
There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
Some people are differing with the use of this for a high-level conversation about striking militarily another country. So we'll see, and I'm certain they won't do that again.
Visit Pittsburgh's annual meeting was held Wednesday, Larry, and it was hosted by an upbeat Jared Bacher.
When we look at 2026 and beyond, we'll have a new airport, a new international airport that'll be world-class. The downtown area will continue to see developments. There will be a lot more opportunities for us to point to the success of the NFL draft.
We really do have a lot going on, and the draft helps really unite the region to try to pull together and make some real progress around not only downtown, but around the 10-county area.
Yeah, the teamwork that's required for this is going to be
Extraordinary.
I mean, probably going to be able to write a book about it. I know this much. Think about all the logistics challenges there are going to be with two different venues like this for the draft, one at Point State Park and the other on the North Shore, and getting people back and forth efficiently.
And your Buccos,
it's a project,
and many of the collective minds of the region are working on it. Thanks, Paul. That's what people are talking about.
This
kind of flew under the radar, but I saw this from President Trump. He's vowing a new approach to getting homeless people off the streets by forcibly moving those living outside into large camps while mandating mental health and addiction treatment, an aggressive departure from the nation's current homelessness policy. And joining us from right here in Pittsburgh on the North Shore is Executive Director of the Light of Life Rescue Mission, Jarrell Gilliam. Solisi, welcome back.
The former Panther basketball
trainer. Hello, Larry. It's always good to be with you.
So I wanted to get your opinion on this new approach that apparently will start at some point soon, since you've been a part of dealing with our homeless population unhoused for a long time. Your reaction?
Better than Paul Skeens.
First of all, I'm glad that there's attention being brought to it. It's most important that we continue to work at this and admit that the current approaches are not being effective or as effective as they need to be. And so we need to continue to push the envelope, to be innovative, to find ways to help those who are suffering in our streets. It is also, as I listen to what the president had to say, it's much more nuanced, and there's not one answer that can be brought to this. As we've talked about this before, Larry, each person's path to homelessness is unique and requires a unique approach in order to help them to get back into health and back into society. What I do appreciate, though, about the approach is that there are times that we know that there are people that are unable to ask for help. And the way that our current our behavioral health system is set up is for volunteerism. It's for people to be able to say, hey, I need help. And when people are not able to recognize that they need help, there's a big word, anosognosia. It's the inability to know that you need help, then they're left to suffer. And in those cases, there are more aggressive kinds of actions that need to be used in order to get people off the streets and into safety.
Wait, and for those severely who have mental illness and deeply disturbed,
and Paul,
the question I have is, the president said, quote,
yeah, he told reporters
we will bring them to mental institutions where they belong with the goal of reintegrating them back into society once they're well enough to manage. That said, where are these mental institutions? We've always heard that we have a lack of mental health care availability in this country,
ironically, in the same city.
Yes, we do, and it's been broken ever since the kind of decommissioning of the state hospital that happened, decades ago. Now there is a rule that most people don't know about. It's called the IMD Exclusion Act, which basically limits hospitals to 16 beds for mental health, and that archaic rule right now limits hospitals here in Pittsburgh from having more than 16 people, admitted at one time. And so it ends up creating this revolving door where people, where Medicaid will no longer pay after a certain point. You can't have more than 16. We need to change that, but we also need new facilities. We all agree that the old facilities and the one flew over the cuckoo's nest kind of thing need to go. But there are new plans. There are new approaches now that are green, that are open, that feel more like campuses, that are trauma-informed. And those kinds of facilities do need to be built
What's the status and of the quarterback
here in Pittsburgh, we do have housing stock, and we have blighted buildings, we have spaces that if we had the will, we could all come together on both sides of the aisle and make a plan. I don't like in his plan where he talked about tent cities. Again, if we're not, if a place is not suitable for human habitation, why are we saying that a tent city is a place for people who are suffering to stay? But I do think we should have a plan, and we need funding for that. And if the federal government wants to provide that, that would be great. We do need to have a plan to have different types of housing and supportive housing options for those who are suffering from behavioral health issues.
Executive Director, we appreciate Jarrell Gilliam and the work you do every day. Thank you. I appreciate your willingness to give your response and
you're
thoughts.
Absolutely right.
Important.
Thank you. It's hard for Let's keep the conversation going.
You got it. From the Light of Life Rescue.
From a number of former high-level athletes, generally they say it takes about 5 years before they really are able to just settle down and say, okay, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, that's a tough transition, and some athletes can never do it. Who was the basketball player that played at Georgetown and in the NBA? I can't come up with a name right now. I should be able to. But he had trouble retiring to the point where it affected his life. You know, and I think the smart athletes are ones who start to get ready before that end game is played and start to get ready for the real game of life. And, you know, there's so many good examples of that. And I think the NFL has been very, careful about helping those guys get in through this transition period. It's tough when you're a great athlete and all that adulation, then all of a sudden it's not there. That's a big void in your life.
It must be, you know, think about Sundays coming through that tunnel before the game and 68,400 people are cheering for you. Yeah, why wouldn't you miss that?
Well, the only thing they miss, Larry, is the post-game interviews with you and I asking stupid questions.
Never a shortage of those. Bill, I appreciate the time. As always, we'll talk to you next Wednesday. Thank you.
All right, guys. Enjoyed it.
The great Bill Hillgrove.
And I think it was really classy of you not to have asked him to get out his crystal ball and ask about Aaron Rodgers.
Although, well, he said he feels that Aaron's going to pull the plug on his career. That may happen.
Yeah.
But
that's a real possibility, too.
At this point, the Steelers are basically his only option if he wants to play. And it was interesting. The crowd last night was kind of lukewarm on Aaron Rodgers coming here. It was really almost like one of those pop-up quizzes. What do you guys think? And they're like, eh.
Yep.
And our own Tamira Rush.
Yes.
From our news department in studio. What is trending with T?
You wouldn't believe this. So yesterday I'm scrolling through my phone and I see Chipotle. And it was like trending. It's like, what? Why would Chipotle, is there a new item on the menu? What's happening with Chipotle? People were spreading rumors that Chipotle was closing. So,
you mean the whole chain?
Yes. So they have kind of like a spinoff to a Chipotle. And they, you know, the numbers weren't adding up. So they kind of pulled back from the spinoff. But the fact that people on social media just take things for what they're worth and just literally trend with them and run with them.
That is the challenge, because people have a hard time in many cases separating what's real and what's not.
Yes.
And they don't help by having these deep fakes and AI ability to make people think it's legit. So that's not true.
No, that is not true. So I'm informing our listeners that that is not true. If you've seen it show up on your Facebook, your Instagram, your Twitter, it is 100% not true.
But what is true is Isley's. It's coming to the Strip District.
Listen,
so somebody goes, that's not true.
I go, yes, it is true. Isley, speaking of Isley's, I always remember growing up.
Skyscraper.
Cone. No.
Chipped ham.
The chopped ham. is what we would say. I mean, chip top, that's what we would.
Chip chop pan.
Chip chop. We couldn't, my you mom couldn't good? Afford all of the high tech other brands of lunch meat. And we were, that was our thing. We would always have, when my mom would make so an Isley chip chopped ham sandwich with a slice of cheese,
you know,
lettuce,
it was really
and tomato.
Good though. Little barbecue sauce on that.
No way.
Yeah.
You're not invited to the cookout with that.
I'm out of the cookout.
No, you're Aaron. Not allowed. You're not.
I'm not invited to the cookout.
Not with barbecue on chip chopped ham. You are absolutely not invited to the cookout.
All right.
Just so you know. Well, we have a new drink that's coming, a sports drink. Michelle Obama and Steph Curry are partnering together with a new sports drink, which is great. That's
great. Well, the former first lady is into this whole health thing.
Yes.
And so Steph Curry, one of the most famous NBA players, one of the greatest shooters in history.
I would say that, yes. So
this is good.
Is this good.
They're
in California, but you can order it on Amazon. It's only $2.29 if you would like to purchase. But our kids like these energy drinks, the Prime and the, you know, Gatorade was back in our days.
Back in the day. So what are they going to do?
Back in our days, yes.
Prime so, on coaches now after big wins?
Yes. Yeah, so the kids like Prime. So now they're stepping it up a little bit and bringing in a new twist to that. So
there are an endless choices for drinks. I mean, if you go, it used to be if you wanted a beer, there were basically like five brands.
Right.
Now there's like millions.
Right. And the kids love it. So that's a good thing. And lastly, I will say they're still talking about Macy's closing the stores. So.
Well, part of that's true.
Part of that's true.
The big box stores
have
had tremendous challenges because people, especially during COVID, found it so easy.
Well, people don't dress up anymore. You know, people
go on an airplane. People are wearing thongs and flip flops.
Right, so you would have some airlines come out and ban certain types of clothing on these kinds. It's just outrageous.
I think
outrageous.
It was Spirit Airlines said, enough is enough.
Listen,
if we can see your parts, it's over.
It's not happening. Trending with tea.
Thank you, Tamara Rush. Thanks, Sean. Heading towards the weekend, at opening day of baseball. Pirates and Miami Marlins, 4:10 first pitch down in Florida with Paul Skeens on the mound. Yeah, Paul, we'll be checking that out for sure.
Definitely.
A report card for America's infrastructure is out, giving the highest ever C grade. And what does all this mean? This comes from the American Society of Civil Engineers, 18 categories. And joining us is a Pittsburgher. His name is Greg Scott. He is a member of the Committee on America's Infrastructure, managed the design and construction of civil, municipal, water, waste projects for communities throughout our area, employed by CDM Smith, and went to Penn State and Pitt for his master. You're one of those rare breeds, Greg.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Where you have, because it's Pitt, Penn State, but you did both, so... that's kind of cool. Anyway, welcome to KDK.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Larry. Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
So let's talk about this report card. Why is this important to all of us?
Yeah, I mean, the infrastructure is the backbone of our economy and, frankly, the health and safety of all citizens in the U.S. So it's very important that, you know, the infrastructure, which is often forgotten or taken for granted, is evaluated and, you know, brought to public consciousness. You know, the built environment, it took money to build it. It takes money to maintain it. And if you don't, there's a consequence, both economically and to health and safety. So, you know, the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, started undertaking this report card back in 1998. Every 4 years, the report card is prepared. And really, this one, this year, is historic in that for those 20 plus years we've the grade's been relatively flat and it's not been good. It's been a C minus. And then beginning in 2021, Congress passed the IIJA, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which was historic in the level of funding that the federal government was putting in the infrastructure. And what we've seen is 4 years later, the grade went up from a C minus to a C. So movement on infrastructure, I mean, it's a long game. I mean, you know, roads last a long time, bridges last, you know, 80-100 years. You know, these things don't rapidly change, but to see that sort of advance in that relatively short period of time is just pretty exciting to see, and that's what we're reporting today.
And Darren, my curiosity then moves from the infrastructure bill to, was it enough money, and is there enough money moving forward to continue get this for this grade to go up again?
Well, we've identified as in along with the report card, ASE prepares a periodic financial analysis of the needs to really change the question from one of, you know, should I spend a dollar or not, to a discussion of, if I don't spend the money, what will it cost me? So really sort of identifying the return on investment of this funding. And what they found, of course, you know, the bad news is there's still a gap. I mean, hence why we're a C. $3.7 trillion over the next 10 years is the funding gap. However, and those numbers are mind-boggling, and they're hard to for the average citizen to relate. What does $3.7 trillion mean?
Right.
But what we saw was, you know, the cost to an individual family was, I think it was $3,300 a year due to bad infrastructure. You know, your lettuce costs more because it takes longer to truck to you. You drive on roads and you have damage to your vehicles because of potholes. Those are just examples. You know, power outages affect your work. So with that investment, that number decreased. And you know, we saw that right now there was a savings realized. And so what we're down here in D.C. today, we're advocating as part of our National Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill, is encouraging Congress to maintain the funding levels they established through the IIJA.
Are you getting the sense that that's welcomed, or because obviously this is very important? And as you know, being a person that's worked in this region, bridges here, and I see a D+ on bridges overall, I guess, we're across America, but bridges are a major concern here as an infrastructure. Do you think there's positive feedback coming from the government now?
Yes. You know, when you sit down and talk one-on-one with the representatives in Congress, there's a recognition of the importance of infrastructure. It's bipartisan. I mean, everyone's got roads and bridges. Everyone's concerned about having them be you know, reliable and safe. And so when you have those discussions, folks do agree. It is difficult. I mean, man, we're not even arguing for increased funding. We want to maintain this level of funding, which is critical because these projects take a long time. They need to be predictable. All those folks, you know, the increased funding resulted in over 200,000 new jobs across America. So if you keep that funding, those jobs stay intact. If you constantly add and subtract the funding, it becomes very difficult, and a lot of these jobs get extended out, which then end up costing more money. So we're really talking about this being an investment in America. We're encouraging Congress to maintain the levels of funding. There is a lot of concern. How do we do that? Where did the money come from? But we're receiving positive messages from the folks we talk to that they recognize that this is an investment. This is not just spending. This is an investment that has return to all of America.
Yeah, and again, Southwestern Pennsylvania has more bridges per capita, right? So that's one of the critical things that hopefully it'll work out. Thanks for explaining what the report card is all about. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You're right. Good luck in Washington.
You know, Larry, there's another side to this story that I was thinking of a moment ago, and that is that by spending this money in maintaining or upgrading our infrastructure, we're also stimulating the economy, aren't we?
Big time.
Creating jobs.
Well, as he just said, over 200,000 jobs directly related to that spending, and it should be nonpartisan because everybody has to cross the bridge.
You got it. I mean, we're going to have one this coming spring and summer when they're replacing the bridge over the Parkway. That's a big one that needs fixed for a long time.
Yeah, and you know who knows a lot about this locally is Rich Fitzgerald. His new role as executive director in the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission is the 10-county area in the city, and one of the things that's part of their mission is to deal with the infrastructure. So we'll follow up with Rich on this next week.
And as you said, it's nonpartisan. I think it's I think everyone can agree that, you know, that if you put 1,000 people in a room and explain to them why we needed to do this for the infrastructure and what it means economically, I don't think anybody has a party affiliation at that point. I think everybody says, yeah, let's do that. This is one big government project I approve of.
Amen.
Desk, it is opening day, and Paul Skeens will be starting for the Bucks at Miami. And the questions many fans have is, can he top last year?
1-2, a swing and a miss. He struck him out. Skeens strikes out Aaron Judge on the slider. And he strikes out Soto and Judge in the first. Paul Skeens, get ready for a Rookie of the Year in Pittsburgh.
And apparently he's added a couple pitches to his arsenal and on the mound today in Miami.
So the question now is, will we hear some of the announcers saying, get ready for a Cy Young award-winning year in Pittsburgh? Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth addressed again that leaked group chat about U.S. airstrikes in Yemen that accidentally included a journalist. Here's what he told reporters yesterday in Hawaii.
There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
I am guessing, regardless, they won't be using that app again.
Isn't that really the point of all of this? You know, is what's the appropriate use of an app in this context with national security information such as it is? And also, Larry, I think, you know, both you and I were saying this earlier, I just assumed that the National Security Council would have their own special app for this kind of thing that nobody else knows about.
Right, especially with the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic on the line.
That's the other big question. Let's find out how that happened, right? Visit Pittsburgh's annual meeting was held Wednesday, hosted by an upbeat CEO, Gerald Barker.
When we look at 2026 and beyond, we'll have a new airport, a new international airport that'll be world-class. The downtown area will continue to see developments. There will be a lot more opportunities for us to point to the success of the NFL draft.
And that draft is drawing, and here's why it's important for people who wonder, the NFL draft coming next April. Actually, talked to a couple of people yesterday, Paul, that they're like, what are you talking about? They, you know, we assume because we hear it every day, the draft is a big deal because it could draw up to 500,000 people. It could pump $150 to $200 million into local economy.
And not to mention also the television exposure from days of coverage of these major. Look at how Detroit shined in the spotlight. The story about Detroit, the national conversation changed after people saw what was going on there. And I would also like to tag in that Jared Bacher also said yesterday that tourism was up almost 4% in 2024.
And that trend will continue into the next year. And because of that, at every governmental level, you know, from municipalities to the city, the county, the state, the region, they are all trying to work together so that we look our best, which in the benefit to all of us is there'll be some things that get done and get fixed because of it.
If I was a documentary maker, Larry, I would want to get in on the ground level of the planning for the draft. And in particular, some of the things I would be interested in include the logistics of getting people from the main venues, you know, from one to the other. One is at Point State Park, the other on the North Shore. You've got a river to navigate there.
Well, my brother has a couple of those rickshaws, you know, that you've seen around town,
oh, yeah,
around
right.
The stadiums. Those
3-2.
Have been a moth.
Swing and a miss. He struck him out. 100 miles an hour. 11 strikeouts for Skeens.
Hey,
I can hear it now.
Six innings of no-hit baseball in his first career start on the road.
That's what people
what
are
a man.
About.
Wow. Paul Skeens.
Right after the news.
You got
the
11,
top
Pittsburgh.
Of this hour, former Pirate pitcher Matt Capps. Oh, we love it,
part
Pittsburgh.
Of the broadcast team. And
Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. It's baseball today.
And, Pirates
and
this,
Paul Skeens on the mound in
really,
Miami. 4:10 first pitch. Pirates open the season. And former Pirate pitcher
the Sportsnet
Matt Capps, who's part of the broadcast team, joins us. this morning, Matt.
50% a larger crew.
You've got to feel, as a major leaguer, give us some idea of what it's like on opening day.
Come on, Larry. It should be a national holiday. We got to get fired up. It's the greatest day of the year. I tweeted it out a little while ago. Happy opening day.
John Winters.
I mean,
he's from Carrick.
If my kids were home from school today, I would gladly write them a note. And teachers, schools can deal with it. It's our national pastime. We got to get fired up about it. We got to be excited. There's a lot to be excited all across baseball. Paul Skeens, let's talk about him. I mean, he's a Pittsburgh Pirate. He's one of ours. And national storyline, as he, I think, should be, assuming he's hoping he stays healthy for the next 15 years. And we got a front row seat. I'm fired up. I'm here in Miami, walking around, getting my steps in.
That's smart.
And enjoying my coffee and dreaming about what it's going to be like here in a few hours.
Well, I got to spend a little time with you and get to know you a little better in Bradenton, and I know that you're really passionate about what you do, and it shows in your work. And that said, I can hear that childlike enthusiasm on opening day and share that. So many great memories. So everybody wants to know, Matt, when I came back from Bradenton, all right, we know we have a solid pitching staff led by Paul Skeens, but what about getting guys to hit and what new acquisitions the Pirates have made with some players? What's the lineup going to be like today?
Well, I mean, Tommy Pham's in there. He's the free agent sign we went and got, having that veteran presence in the outfield. I think that's good. Looking forward to him. I believe he's leading off today. We've got Brian Reynolds in there, who, you know, the staple of the Pirates lineup the last couple of years, and hopefully for many years to come. And Kutch is just a pro, the ultimate pro. He's going to give you a professional at bat. You know, aging. He's still younger than I am, but hopefully feels good. And, you know, I see Key Bryan's back in there. He's at the bottom side. And, you know, I am so hopeful that Key can refine kind of who he was when he first burst onto the scene at the big league level, that right center field swing. And he's got some pull power with mistakes, but not trying to go out and catch the ball out front as much as he is letting it get deep. And, you know, from what I know, a big part of Key Bryan and his success is going to be the health, if he's healthy. Andy Rodriguez at first base today, I believe. So we'll get our first look there and see what he looks like at first base. I know he's taken some ground balls last week or a couple of days in spring training. And, you know, the kid's athletic, and to be able to have another switch hitter in the lineup, that's a nice luxury for the Pirates staff to have. But that's the question mark. You got to go out. You got to play. Let's see what happens. You know, we're going to need everybody to pull their end of the rope when their number's called. And that's just kind of the situation we're in. I was looking forward to Adam Frazier. I know he's had some success in his career against Alcantara. Not in the lineup today, I don't believe. But, I like bringing Frazier back. Some versatility on the infield, can play a couple of different positions out there and swing it from the left-handed bat and back home where he's comfortable in Pittsburgh. So hopefully he can have a resurgence of a year.
Matt, I just found your X account, so I'm following now one of the more than 6,000 people who follow you on X. And wanted to ask you, which players coming out of spring training look like they're improving and on an arc upward? Who can we get excited about this year?
Well, again, staying on Key Bryan, I just mentioned a little while ago, I saw him take some really nice swings and most importantly, look healthy. I tend to pay a lot more attention to the pitching side, and there's some young guys that I'm excited about that aren't here right now that look forward to seeing at some point this year or in the near future. Bubba Chandler, I think everybody knows about Bubba. I really enjoyed watching Eddie Yeane pitch. Maybe a little lesser-known guy, but Greg Brown and I have just doted over him behind closed doors and what we've seen him do or saw him do in spring training. He was part of the Josh Bell trade, I believe, from a number of years ago. And, you know, tip of the cap, if he comes up and does what it looks like he's going to be capable of doing, that'll be a huge, huge asset for the Pirates for years to come. On the offensive side, again, I think we're just going to have to piece it together. We're going to need guys to that clutch gene, that clutch hitting when opportunities arise, and there's going to be opportunities. We can't let them pass. We have to capitalize on all of them, or at least more times than we don't. And I think that's something that when the Pirates have been good the last couple of years, we've seen them do really well, the small ball type stuff, beating out the back end of a double play, going first to third on a routine base hit, taking that extra 90 feet, just being aggressive on the base paths we need to see on the offensive side, and smart baseball, hitting behind the runner, leadoff double. We need that next guy to really be diligent about making sure they get him over to third base with less than two outs and give us an opportunity to score one run in that inning. And if you look at, you look across Major League Baseball and the history of our sport, if you average, if you can manufacture one run an inning, you're going to win a whole lot of ball games. If you're averaging nine runs a game, you're going to win a whole lot of ball games. But I don't think this lineup is constructed to stand toe-to-toe with a lot of teams and just bash the baseball. We're going to have to find ways to manufacture runs, get guys into scoring position, and take advantage of opportunities when we get them.
We're with Matt Capps, former Pirates pitcher and broadcaster. And I think, Matt, I had a chance to interview the Pirates' new hitting coach, who was actually drafted by the Bucs in 2008, Matt Hagen. I joked to him, Paul, you'll appreciate this. I said, you know what, Matt? You doing your job is one of the most important keys to getting this offense going. And he looked at me and said, thanks a lot. So getting these guys to hit better will make a marked improvement, right, Matt?
No, it absolutely will. And it exactly what I was saying. I mean, it's opportunities. Cut down on the strikeouts, put the ball in play, give yourself a chance to find a hole or find some outfield grass and get to first base successfully. And then just play in the game from there. A couple of years ago, we saw a very aggressive team on the base paths with trying to steal bags and take advantage of the defense. We're going to have to do all those things right on the offensive side to be successful. You do that, we get another year out of Brian Reynolds, like what we've come to expect out of him, just steady and the production he has. We have O'Neill Cruz turn the corner. I did like that in spring training. I mentioned, I pay a lot more attention to the pitchers than I do the hitters, but it did jump out at me with O'Neill, his pitch selection. You know, a couple of years ago, you got strike one on him. You didn't have to throw another pitch in the strike zone, and he was out. And I saw him lay off some good, especially off-speed pitches and breaking balls from lefties going away from him that jumped out, and I made note of. Hopefully he's seeing the ball better, relaxing, getting a little more comfortable and confident in who he is and what he's capable of. And then when the game comes to him, he can impact it in a way that other people just can't. And that power, the speed, everything about him is incredible. But when he tries to do too much and gets outside of his game, I think he gets in trouble. So hopefully he's kind of maturing into who he is and becoming more comfortable in the outfield. And hopefully we see that translate to both sides of his game.
Well, Matt, enjoy this day. Appreciate your time this morning. And what time do you head over to the ballpark?
Well, I'm going to go over probably about 11:30, I'm guessing. I'm hearing there's a rumor running around on the streets here in Miami that the gentleman that was kidnapped in Ace Ventura is throwing out the first pitch. So I'm really anxious.
Yeah, well, if you see Mr. Dan Marino, tell him we said hello.
I certainly will. So I hear he's throwing. Can you confirm that? Do you know?
There are sources close to the top. You're on the right track.
All right, awesome.
All right,
I love
Matt.
It.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, guys.
Matt Capps with the Pirates broadcast team.
Good stuff.
Yeah, there's a rumor Marino, who loved baseball, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Was 25-0 as a pitcher at Central Catholic. This might be throwing out the first pitch. We'll see. Either that or every Thursday, we check in with the food editor with Pittsburgh Magazine. Christy Graber is with us. Christy, good morning.
morning, Larry. How are you doing?
I'm good. Are you a person that's ever gone to a opener for baseball?
No, but I've been to a few media previews when, like, there's no one in the stadium, and that's pretty cool, too.
We have to come back when there are people there.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And you're the food editor, so you know what's beautiful about baseball? It's laid back. You just take your time.
I do love baseball.
You get something to eat.
Andy Van Slyke.
Andy Van Slyke, old school. All right, let's talk about what you're talking about for Pittsburgh Magazine. This is a really important subject. Pittsburgh's Tree of Life aims to eradicate hate with a traveling exhibition.
So this exhibition opens today on the University of Pittsburgh campus, my alma mater, and it tells the story of the October 27th, 2018 synagogue shooting in Squirrel Hill. There are more than 10,000 items on display that were sent to Pittsburgh from people across the globe as gestures of comfort and solidarity and love. And so there's lots of good in the world, and you can see that with your own eyes. It'll be at Pitt through Friday, April 25th, and from there it travels to Cleveland, New York City, and then Miami.
And really important to take a look at that. And I understand at Acrisure Stadium yesterday, they had a gathering of high school students as part of the Eradicate Hate. There's a big event coming up 6 months from now. That said, being a foodie that you are, a foodie-friendly lounge called Hey Babe.
Hey Babe. I love this, though, because it's a very cute married couple that are running this. They've been industry veterans for a very long time, and this is going to be great. Everybody was sad when the Whitfield Restaurant and Ace Hotel closed during the pandemic, but these guys, they're bringing more fun to this historic building that was built in 1909. The upscale lounge will offer craft cocktails, wine, beer, and non-alcoholic options, and a menu of small plates, retro decor, and chill vibes. It'll open sometime next year, I believe. Yes, sometime next year. So keep your eyes open. I'll be following it because I can't wait.
Is there the Ace Hotel itself never reopened, right?
It is the Maverick. So it is still functioning as a hotel. The Hey Babe people, they leased the ground floor, the bar, and the restaurant area, which will open in about 6 to 8 months after the cocktail bar opens.
All right.
Lots of stuff going on.
Enter to win. You got a VIP set of tickets to the National Comedy Center. And a lot of people don't know where that is, but it's not that far away.
Yeah, it's Jamestown, New York, comedy's hometown. And the comedy issue, like, it's almost April Fool's Day and our comedy issue is out. You can join Pittsburgh Magazine on a VIP day trip to the National Comedy Center and Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz Museum, which is worth it right there. And you could take this tour with Pittsburgh managing editor Sean Collier. So check it out. There's lots of stuff that you could win. I love Lucy, so, you know, I think I might go.
Yeah, and you and a guest get a private, catered, after-hours VIP museum experience in a luxury motor coach, as you mentioned, not that far, 2.5 hours from the Berg.
Yeah, lots of laughs.
All right. Well, read all about it, Pittsburgh Magazine, food editor Christy Graber. Christy, we'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right. Take care, Larry.
They always have a lot of great stuff. If you haven't gone to Pittsburgh Magazine, check it out online. And 10 to 2, Marty Griffin will check in with him in a few minutes, see what he's working on today. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. And tonight, a very special event, the 13th Annual Gala, a night of celebration and inspiration with Lending Hearts. And the woman behind it is Vaso Poloris, who I actually met on Mount Washington a few semesters ago, right? We were looking out over the city.
Yes. And, I remember it. Was still laughing like it was yesterday.
Yeah, because the actress Jane Seymour has her Open Hearts and Lending Hearts, and they actually honored you a couple of years ago. You actually got to go out there to California, didn't you?
I did. It was 2 years ago now, and it was a great honor. It was a real great honor and a joy to celebrate with her and her foundation and the great works they do.
And let's talk about how you founded your organization, Lending Hearts.
Yes, we started, now we're going on 14 years ago in 2011, but it was all started back, the concept due to the process in 2004, when my youngest sister was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. And it was through her journey that the inspiration came about, and seeing back then a great need for the free emotional, social, and physical support to children and young adults in our region, providing that care outside of the hospital setting.
And in this case, tonight, you always have some really special people with you. I know the Gray family is with you tonight with their son, Bryson. But also, how about Neil Shipley? This graduate of Central Catholic, Mount Lebanon native, Ohio State grad who stormed the golf world last year by being the low amateur at the Masters and the Open. He's a special young man.
He really is. He's funny. Have you seen the next Netflix episode with him? I was laughing hysterically. He's got a great sense of humor. There's a really good person. And he's perfect for us in honoring, just like all of our other past honorees. These are really special people who lend their hearts to others. And we treasure their involvement with Lending Hearts and the things they do with us. So we need to celebrate him tonight and the Gray family and all of our supporters who have gotten us to where we are today.
And tell us about Bryson Gray.
He's such a great little boy. His family is outstanding, and they've used their journey to give back to others too, and what they can do. And ironically enough, every year they put on a mini golf tournament to raise money for stocking the pantry in the oncology department at Children's Hospital. So it's a full circle of fun, of giving back, golf. It's a great night to celebrate all together.
Yeah, and I appreciate the work you do to support all those living with cancer, and especially the kids. So, Vaso, I know you're busy. You're heading down to the Fairmont. Go to lendinghearts.org if you want to learn more about what Vaso Pelorus and her team do. All right, all the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
All right. I attended a couple of times, Paul. You know what gets you is the kids dealing with cancer. It's, you can't imagine.
I mean, it's the most unfair slap in the face about life, right?
It's a great way to put it. It's just unfair. So anything you can do to help. And Vassar is one of those people in this community that, you know, took a burden on herself and did this all for everybody else. And I always appreciate that. And this Neil Shipley, he is terrific.
What a character.
Oh, my God. And what she's talking about, there's a series about professional golfers that's a streaming, you know, one of those. And
I hadn't heard about it until just now.
Marty talked about it. You know, Marty doesn't even golf, but he really loved what they do with this. And Neil Shipley, because of what he did last year before he turned pro, was fantastic. So we wish him all the best.
Well, I got to go check that out.
All right, baseball today, 4:10. And we're going to talk to Joe Block every Friday at 9:35. We'll kind of follow along. And KDK Radio, we are the world's first station to carry baseball. Pirates flagship, we share that now with the Fan, our brother station. And looking forward to seeing what this season brings.
Well, we'll get off to a pretty good start, I would assume, today with Paul Skeens starting against the Marlins. Like to see him put together another performance like he did on opening day last year. What did he do? Like strike out? No hit through six innings or something, right? Yeah.
He was amazing. Yeah, his first road start, he struck out 11.
Amazing.
And that was to the point where he made professional baseball players look silly. He really did.
And now he's adding pitches to his repertoire.
He is. So from that standpoint, we'll look forward to see what it brings us. Coming up, we're going to check in with Marty Griffin and see what he has planned today on the Big K Morning Show.